I love these guys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Secondhand Lions podcast. I'm here with my great friend, John Drennan. We've been Lions fans longer than we care to admit, all the way back to the late 50s, early 60s. And so we've suffered. We've suffered a lot until very recently when the new regime took over, the new owner, the new GM, the new coach, and things started looking up, made the playoffs 3 years in a row, or 2 years in a row, sorry. We got to the NFC Championship game 1 year, and things are looking up. And then we took sort of a step back last year, which was disappointing to everybody. But the thing is, and you've mentioned this before, John, that a 9-8 season, we would have been salivating over a 9-8 season many years. But it was terrible last year because we were expecting so much better. So in light of that, I was interested to see Brad Holmes on Good Morning Football giving a few minutes on the state of the Lions. And one of the things he talked about was how the expectation to make the playoffs had changed the mindset in the team, and then missing it has led to a lot of reflection and several changes. Couple of them is they've adjusted the off-season schedule by canceling the rookie minicamp. They decided against holding joint practices. Those decisions reflected a broader organizational effort to reevaluate every detail following a frustrating year. That's a direct quote from GM Holmes. So, and they think they've really helped rebuild and reshape the roster. And I know you have some thoughts on that as well, John. So I'll give it over to you.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, they're not just talking about changes. They're making changes. And I really admire that because they clearly did a kind of a total inventory of, okay, what happened last year and what do we need to do? And they've done a lot of things. I know you'll talk more about that and I might too, but it's interesting. You mentioned new owner, and they do. Sheila Hamp got put in charge, but it's still a Ford family. And, you know, for years, the drumbeat was sell the team, sell the team. And I was on board with that. I mean, with the goofy decisions they had all the way back to Russ Thomas as the GM. And then when they had Matt Millen as the GM and kept him in there, I think he was there 5 years. That was four too many. And then Quinn, you know, they brought in what's his name from New England trying to be the next Patriots. And I got kind of excited, but that went nowhere. And so I was all on board with sell the team. But what they did was Sheila Hamp stepped in and leadership matters, Bill. I mean, I won't go through the litany of things that she did, but just great leadership. And so, yeah, you're right. I like being at a place where we're disappointed with a winning season because we're not in the playoffs and we weren't close to what we thought we could be. So, hey, and you did mention changing some of the things in their schedule. I'll go back to you on that. But before we do, I don't know if you saw for this upcoming year's schedule, the Lions' schedule, according to one ranking, is the easiest schedule in the NFL. Now, there's part of me that doesn't like that because I think you got to play the best and beat the best, but you can do that in the playoffs. Last year was a gauntlet. And by the way, some of those teams that were so bad last year won't be as bad this year. So like when we played the Giants, this is a different Giants team this year. And we almost lost to the Giants last year. But anyhow, that to me, there's so many. I keep talking about the boxes that have been checked for this upcoming year. And one of them is strength of schedule. You know, we should do well with this schedule. So. But what changes you? I missed the interview with Brad Holmes. So, what are some of the changes that are going on?
Well, he said that the ones I mentioned, that the off-season schedule was changed. I know the Lions have suffered injuries on a cataclysmic scale the last 2 years, especially to the defense. And I think some of these changes are in light of that. They're doing less hitting. They're not going to do the joint practices, which are essentially games. And I believe it's this year they're going to do fewer, maybe it's next year, but I thought it was this year they're going to do fewer preseason games. And I think those are all designed to be healthy, not only at the start of the season, but throughout the season. I can't imagine the pounding that these guys take week after week. For it used to be 12 weeks, then 14, then 16. Now it's 17. They're talking about going to 18. That's if you don't make the playoffs. Then the playoffs are another 3 or 4. It's brutal on their bodies. And so, whatever they can do to ameliorate that, like that word, ameliorate,
I like that. Yeah, I
whatever they.
made note.
Whatever they can do to fix that, they're doing. He also mentioned that he thinks that this is the deepest team that they've ever had. So he said that obviously there are no guarantees in the NFL, but he sounded very confident that the Detroit they had assembled a very deep team entering 2026. They made a lot of roster changes through free agency and draft. He then came probably the biggest statement in the interview. He said, "Look, no one has a crystal ball, but I would say this is probably the deepest team we've had, probably on both sides of the line of scrimmage." So he sounds confident. Of course, he should sound confident. It's May, and they haven't played any games, so. If he sounded a lack of confidence, that would be bad news.
Well, Bill, I do think this is the deepest team as I've assessed this, and that's a good thing because last year, the last 2 years, they were running out of guys at different positions. And as an example, the cornerback room this year, we're going into it with two big question marks. Terrion Arnold, A, finished the year injured. B, had some potential legal challenges. And C, he wasn't quite as good as they hoped he'd be as a first round pick. But he's also showed he could potentially come be a lockdown corner. He's got that potential. Secondly, Ennis Rakestraw, they were equally high on him almost 2 years ago out of Missouri. He's been hurt for 2 years. So let's just set those guys on the shelf for a minute. We still have a strong cornerback room. We got DJ Reader. We added Roger McCreary. We drafted in the fifth round someone who everyone thought would be a third rounder in Abney. Okay, who else? I'm leaving out some guys. But if you add in Arnold and Rakestraw, even one of those guys, that's a strong room. They've done the same thing with safety, so I feel like the D backs they have depth. Also, not sure we're done yet. There's still a chance to sign free agents and pick guys off practice squads as we get closer to opening day.
I'm a little confused, John. Did you say DJ Reader is a cornerback?
I did. Is it DJ Reed? DJ Reed.
DJ Reader is
He's a giant.
he's yeah, I was gonna say, even if he is a cornerback, he's not doing us any good.
No, who's the cornerback we got from the Jets? And while you're looking for that, the other changes, in addition to deeper, we're definitely younger and I think healthier. I mean, Graham Glasgow and Taylor Decker, those guys were hurt a lot. Amik Robertson, he was like 30. Khalif Raymond was 30, 30 plus. Alex Anzalone, 30 plus. We're just a younger, I think, healthier, deeper team.
Well, I'm not seeing a Reed or a Reader.
All right. Well, you talk. I'll find Reed. All right, we got listeners going, come on, guys.
Right. Well, this just goes to show you what John said at the beginning of several of our podcasts is we are not experts. We are fans.
Oh, I was more making the point we got fading memories.
That too. So,
All right, Bill, DJ Reed. Sorry, it's easy to. We had DJ Reader, who's now with the New York Giants. That's part of our news from this week. He's signed as a free agent, I think 2 years for about $15 million. But we have DJ Reed, cornerback from New York. Well, he was our top free agent last year and did well till he got hurt, and then he was pretty crappy at the end of the year, but everyone's thinking he'll bounce back as a cornerback, starting cornerback.
well, the two biggest concerns I felt like going into the post or off season was we needed help on the defensive line, especially with regard to pass rush. And we're hopeful that that's been shored up. But the most important thing is we needed offensive line help. And I really think that the addition of Blake Miller has addressed that in a significant way. I hope that he ends up as good as everybody says he is. Like Brad Holmes said, there's no guarantees in the NFL. I've been amazed throughout all my years of watching football how many college football players that are just all world get to the NFL and they can't do it. And then other guys who you hardly ever even heard of get to the NFL and they're all pros. So I'm sure
Well,
there'll be some surprises.
I certainly agree and have for months. Those were our two needs, and we have addressed them, not just with Miller as a tackle, but Larry Borum, who's got a lot of experience as a starting tackle, and then Bartsch as a good backup, and Scruggs from Texas as another backup, all on the old line, and then I feel like we didn't really get to discover Miles Frazier last year. He was a late round pick, but a good candidate out of LSU who spent a lot of the year hurt. But when he did play, he looked pretty good. And this will be year two. He's going to be battling Christian Mahogany for that left guard starting position. And hopefully he loses out and is a strong backup because I remember last year thinking, give it a couple of years and Christian Mahogany and Ratledge could be both all-pro guards. I just think they have that potential, those two guys.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. It seems like not only have they gotten better and more deeper as a team, but I think the coaching staff is better. And a lot of times that makes a big difference. You can see that in other sports. Just look at the Pistons. 2 years ago, they lost 68 games. The roster's changed somewhat, but not significantly. And J.B. Bickerstaff has them the top team in the Eastern Conference. Coaching matters, and I'm confident in Campbell. I think we've got a good offensive coordinator. I think we have a good D coordinator. And then some of these other guys that we picked up to do position coaching, and Dan Skipper, for example, he knows the Lions inside and out, and he's going to be an offensive assistant. So, and who was the guy we got as a passing game coordinator?
Well, I think you're talking about Mike Kafka, who came
Right,
from the
yeah.
Giants.
He was under consideration for the offensive coordinator. So essentially, we got two of them. Now, hopefully, they won't butt heads. But I think that the talent of the coaching staff matters a lot. And I think the Lions improved that considerably.
100%, Bill. Coaching matters, and I think that's a huge box we can check. They've upgraded, and I know I shared several weeks ago, Drew Petzing said, we actually have four offensive coordinators. We have myself, he was hired for that. Mike Kafka, who was the offensive coordinator for the Giants last year, who, by the way, took over as a head coach when they fired
Dayball.
Daboll, thanks. And then he said, and we got Dan Campbell because he's called plays now for, a season and a half. But we got Jared Goff. And I love that comment because he was referencing Jared's like an offensive coordinator on the field. And so I just think they've reset their coaching, especially offensively. But on defense, the D coordinator's now entering his second year. That's a big deal to get that first year under your belt, and everyone's high on him. Of course, Hank Fraley is considered maybe the best offensive line coach in the NFL, and he's working with these young guys. Bill, our offensive line, think about this. Penei Sewell's entering his fifth year, fifth or sixth. But he's the old guy.
Right.
So it's
And
a
he's still young.
young, powerful offensive line. So, Bill, you talked about okay, so we're not having the joint practices. Last year we had them with the Texans and Dolphins. And you're right, that's like games, that's real hitting. I'm not sure if you mentioned they got rid of the rookie camp. They're the only team this year that got rid of that, and people think, oh God, what are they doing? Well, it doesn't mean they're not bringing in the rookies and having meetings and teaching them, getting them with the culture and teaching them things they need to know, but they're just not doing the investment of time and on-field activities that they have in the past. And also, did you mention they aren't doing the local pro day this year?
No, I didn't see that. He didn't mention that. But that's not surprising.
Yeah, and what is that? Well, that's where I think you can bring in players from a 50 or 100-mile radius. So they would bring in players from University of Toledo and Western Michigan and Wayne State and local guys that wanted to come try out. I like it as a PR thing, but they don't typically pull players. I think they've picked up a couple backup players with that process over the years. But any process like that takes a lot of time and planning and, coaching. And so they, and the last thing, of course, Brad Holmes did not attend the owners' meeting this year. And his reasoning was, I really need to be locked in on this draft. And man, I think they hit a home run in the draft.
I certainly hope so. I'm looking forward to the new season. I'm looking forward to them getting off to a better start than they did against Green Bay last year. Although they started 4-1, so I thought all was right with the world and the Lions. It
Yeah.
went downhill in a hurry.
Hey, when you mentioned Green Bay, my ears picked up. Last year you mentioned, and this was early in our podcast season. We started the week of the Hall of Fame game in July. But you had mentioned the early polls last year. You couldn't believe how they're putting Green Bay ahead of the Lions and other teams. And well, Bill, this year, just this
They
week, they
turned out to
saw.
be right last year.
Well, but they lost to the Bears. I mean, they bettered the Lions, that's for sure. But this week, the ESPN power rankings came out, Bill. They're going through them and they have Green Bay at number 8. And then they finally got to the Lions at number 11. I think they had the Bears at 10. I'm having trouble with that. But it's only a preseason ranking, but
Well, 50 years of history doesn't get washed away with two good seasons. I
well, you
think
and I were
last year.
talking earlier, Bill. The Lions, we have felt, still don't get the due respect, but also the quarterbacks. You made a point earlier when we were talking that Jared Goff, in fact, go ahead and share your insights on that because I
Well,
agree.
Goff gets ranked third or fourth in the NFC North, which by any statistical measure, he's first.
Exactly.
He's top three or four in the entire league by all the ways they measure quarterbacks, by completion percentage, touchdowns versus interception ratio. You just go on and on, and almost everything, Goff is in the top five at least of quarterbacks, and somehow he gets ranked below everybody in the division, which, a stain is hard to get rid of, and I think he was stained by losing that Super Bowl when he was with Los Angeles to New England. Not that he's alone in losing Super Bowls to Tom Brady in New England, but he lost that one. They didn't play very well. And then he was with the Lions. He got traded away and they got Matthew Stafford and immediately won the Super Bowl. So that seemed to diminish Goff even further, because they can say, well, look, LA, all they needed was a different quarterback, and they were Super Bowl champs. So I think there's a stain, unfair though it is, that he's got, and I think the only way to get rid of that is to get to a Super Bowl and win it.
Well, hopefully this year, Bill. When Jared Goff, his first year with Detroit, I remember being pretty frustrated, thinking he did not protect the ball well. So when he'd
You
get
didn't.
sacked, he'd fumble it or he threw some interceptions. But mainly it was protecting the ball. But a big part of that was, it was a team that had 3 wins. They had a long way to go. And this last year, and I know listeners or Detroit fans will say, well, Goff, he's not mobile. He can't scramble. Well, okay, but here's what he does do. As you always say, the most important ability is availability. He doesn't get hurt, knock on wood, but there's reasons for that. He's smart with his body. He doesn't put his body at risk. If he gets hurt, we got issues. Secondly, he makes really good decisions. But where Jared Goff is so good is he's got a missile of an arm. He's got a great arm when protected. And so this year, that he could have the best protection he's had since he's been a Lion this year. And with these receivers and a running game, he's loaded with skills. And if I had to have him or any other QB in the North, I'd take him in a heartbeat with this
Absolutely.
team. So you're right. I'm all over what you just said about that. But yeah, I saw one list that had him ranked the fourth best quarterback in the North going into this season. And I'm like, how do you guys view yourself as experts? Put
Oh, they had
that
Kyler Murray ahead of him.
right. That well, the one I saw did. Other ones I've seen him listed third behind Love and Williams in different order. And I've always thought Williams is going to be a really good quarterback, especially if he's coached right. And I think we saw that's probably going to be true last year, but still, he's nowhere close to Goff at this point.
Well, the other thing is the Bears played the weakest schedule last year. So,
Right. And won a lot of games kind of last minute, which
freakishly
typically is a
won.
sign of a good team, but not when you're beating bad teams. So.
Yeah, they won a couple just on complete freakish plays.
Right.
So, what this discussion reminded me of, not everybody who listens and loves the Lions is also a Red Wings fan, but the Red Wings had a goalie for years called Chris Osgood, and he's one of only two goalies in the history of the NHL with 400 wins and is not in the Hall of Fame. So, and he has a stain on him for some reason. I think part of it is they just said, well, the Red Wings were so good for so long, that's why he won all those games. But yeah, players in any sport can get tagged with a reputation. And I think that's what's happened to Goff.
No, I totally agree with that. But again, if you go back and compare his numbers with Matthew Stafford's since that trade, Stafford's 5 years with LA and Goff's five with Detroit, they're almost spot on equal across the board.
Well, yeah, and the thing about that is you have to consider that as part of that, Detroit had a three-win season.
Right, exactly.
So since that first season when Stafford was on a Super Bowl winning team and Goff was going 3-13-1, if you take that season out, Goff's better.
Yeah, absolutely. In that season, you might say, well, look, LA won the Super Bowl. Look at the impact Stafford had. Well, no question he had impact, but they also had Darnold and great receivers. And LA knew they were maybe a quarterback away from winning the Super Bowl, and they didn't feel Goff was that quarterback. Well, again, do the 5 year comparison, folks. So. I'm not saying Goff is better than Stafford, but I am saying Goff is a real deal, and I'm glad he's a Lion, and I think this year could be
Well,
his best.
and to be fair, I don't think anybody's better than Stafford.
Right. And that's why LA gave Goff and a bunch of first round draft picks for him.
Right.
And they won a Super Bowl. So, that was a good trade for everybody. But Bill, you mentioned the Osgood and the Red Wings. Man, I got to throw kudos at the Pistons. I know this is a Lions podcast, but folks, they were down 3-1 against the Magic. And it wasn't because they were playing horrible. The Magic was playing really well. And after all, they're Magic. They're in Disney Town. Come on. But they're down 3-1, come back home and win. Now it's 3-2, and that win was a struggle. It wasn't easy. Then they go back to Orlando. They're down 24, I believe, early in the third quarter.
Right.
They not only brought it back to tie and go ahead, but they end up winning that one by about 15. And I believe the stat was Orlando missed 27 of their last 28 shots. Now you might say, well, that's why Detroit came back. And yeah, it was, but you got to credit some defense and momentum shift in that. And they didn't just win by two, they won by a lot. So that win was enormous. And then they came back to Detroit, and it looked like they might blow the Magic out. In fact, I remember texting you, Bill, saying something like Orlando looks dejected or deflated after that loss at home. But Orlando did keep it kind of close, but not close enough. Pistons come back from 3-1 down, win it in seven, and now they're 1-0 against the Cavs. And tonight, of course, this is Thursday, the 7th. Tonight they play Game two against the Cavaliers in Detroit.
Yeah, that game you were talking about, John, they outscored the Magic 55 to 19 in the second half.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, I mean, just to hear that a pro team only got 19 points and a half in a playoff game is like, you must have read that wrong.
Only got 8 points in the fourth quarter. Well, John, this has been fun. Look forward to next week. Remember, everybody, if you want to check out our podcast, we're the shlpodcast.com. The shlpodcast.com, that stands for the Secondhand Lions. And we look forward to being with you again next week. Any last thoughts, John?
Yeah, and that's actually our website. So if you want to learn a little more about us and go to our website, see what's on there and leave a comment, we would welcome that. But Bill, I know every week now we're getting closer to the real deal, so it's exciting. Look forward to being back in a week. Take care.
Take care, everyone.